Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games as all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Save big on your next project at Menards. Check out our huge selection of Richmond water heaters. Whether it's electric or gas, tank or tankless, Menards has what you need in stock. Ensure that you have hot water for when you need it most with a new Richmond water heater from Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number two of a Wednesday Live right here on the Early Line. Hour number two of three all across the Spiz Grizz Network. That is Sports Grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. DRS, a ton to get to here in hour number two. We will set the stage for weekend number five of the college football season following a significant Saturday that was week number four. We'll take an early line approach at the National Football League as well. And Donnie, a significant week all around the sports landscape, including out in Rome for country or continent. It's the 2023 Ryder Cup on the golf course. Team USA, Team Europe battling it out in Rome for the 2023 Ryder Cup Championship. DRS right now, Team Europe a slight favorite, even money plus 100, just 10 cents in front of the Americans, plus 110 for the United States. For this to end in a tie, that would be 10-1. The U.S. did win the last Ryder Cup DRS, originally scheduled for the COVID summer of 2020, had to be postponed until 2021, and the U.S. was victorious on home soil over at Whistling Straits in Wisconsin. Now it flips to Europe, though, where the Europeans have won four of the last five Ryder Cups outright. DRS, Europe has won the last six Ryder Cups on European soil dating back to 1997. The last American Ryder Cup victory on European soil came back in England in 1993. So the U.S. trying to win on a broad turf. We will see if it happens this weekend in Rome. Quickly, we welcome in our Sports Grid Radio audience here. Hour number two of three live on the Early Line on this Wednesday. He's Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. You're listening on Sirius XM channel 159 and all of our radio terrestrial affiliates now in the mix as well. DRS, the 2023 Ryder Cup. Give me the preview, my friend.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one here overall. And one of the few things that we take a look at here in golf, it's usually the golf clap and be quiet and shush and let the guy make his putt. Home field advantage, which is now home course advantage, is sensational. Now, hear me out on this. Like most golf fans, including myself, week to week, you'll watch the PGA, right? Oh, it's interesting here. And then we have the fracture off with LIV. But at the same time as now we're watching it through, the major championships are so much fun. If you've never watched the Ryder Cup and you want to get interested in golf, this is the best way to do it because you're taking a look at nobody getting paid in this. So when you see Rory McIlroy make a, you know, get a win, let's just say, in a singles match or a better ball match here, he didn't get paid $1 million for that. It's absolutely free. They do this because of how much pride you have in the continent there for Europe, in the United States, team camaraderie. And the reason I bring this up, and it's felt like this for the past 20 years, team camaraderie, Ben, has really felt like it's been on the side of the European squad time and time again. It almost looks like, it's hard to say this, but I don't want to say they care more, but it looks like they're more invested in national pride and country pride and how important it is to take down the big bad Americans, where you usually look at the American team, you know, top 10 golfers, it's Tiger Woods in the past, it's Phil Mickelson, you know, worth 50, 100, 300, $500 million. Okay, no big deal. We'll get out there. If we win or lose, it's okay. Now, granted, I know they take it much more serious than that, but the way I just look at it with the handicapping, and again, it was for a while Team USA that had the lead here, who was the favorite here at the FanDuel Sportsbook. That's flipped over to Europe now at a plus 100, and I can't deny it. There's just something about the European team over the past 20 years where they've turned in and hit the gas pedal here on knocking the Americans around.
Listen, there's probably some players, DRS, that even the most Intuit golf fan might not recognize on that European side. Nikolai Højgaard out of Norway. He'll play alongside his countryman, though, Victor Hovland, who has been sensational. Nikolai Højgaard actually might not even be from Norway. I'm not sure what that country flag is. We'll get back to it.
Like
some names that you don't even know, DRS, on this list. I consider myself a pretty in-the-know golf fan. I don't know who Ludvig Åberg is from Sweden. I guess I'm showing my colors here as things stand, but that's the European side.
German.
Of course, the headliners as a part of Team Europe are going to be known. Roy McIlroy, John Rahm, Victor Hovland, who was sensational to end out this year, claiming the FedEx Cup. Matthew Fitzpatrick, Tommy Fleetwood, the long flowing hair of the Englishman. They are going to be stacked, but there is that camaraderie, DRS, that you talked about. It's often one of the things highlighted because the Europeans, either on the European Tour, now the DP World Tour, all hang out more than those do on the United States. However, there should be some camaraderie this year for Team USA. The captain, by the way, for Team Europe is Luke Donald. Here's the roster of the Americans. Scotty Scheffler, Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele, Max Homa, Brian Harman, the champion golfer of the year, winning the Open Championship. Wyndham Clark, victorious at the U.S. Open. And then the captain's pick, Jordan Spieth, Colin Morikawa, Sam Burns, Justin Thomas. That was controversial as JT did not have a good year on the course in 2023, and Ricky Fowler, the resurgence for Ricky. The name I skipped over, DRS, that will be a point of conversation this week over in Italy, Brooks Koepka, a LIV golfer in the field. Technically, LIV golfers did not earn world rankings points, DRS, to feature into the Ryder Cup, but could be selected by the captain. And when you think big game hunter, there is no bigger than Brooks Koepka for Team USA. He is out there for the Americans. And DRS, I think some of that PGA Tour versus LIV drama certainly dwindled as we got that huge breaking news update, what feels like multiple months now, about that merger forthcoming between LIV Golf and the PGA Tour.
Yeah, that was big there, too, because, again, you try to put bygones be bygones and put it aside because you're playing for the bigger picture here. What rival faction that you're with at this point here. You're coming together as a nation, and that's what's most important. And also, these guys stay together here at the Ryder Cup. They've known for, you know, weeks now who's going to be on this team. You've also had some downtime. There hasn't been a lot of PGA golf going on at this point, so these guys are playing those golf courses and playing together. And then if you're the captain, you're trying to fit in those pieces, you know, who are best friends, who play together, whose styles mix here, whose styles don't go together to try to play out. And also comes down to on Sunday who you're putting out there first, who you're putting out there in the middle, and who you're putting out there to close out on Sunday. That's the wonderful thing about the Ryder Cup. Like, you do have see some guys get out there, excuse me, countries I should say, get out the leads on like Friday and Saturday, but we know it always comes down to Sunday. You're always going to be in it. You could sweep it and go 8-0 on Sunday and completely take over the Ryder Cup or however many golfers go on Sunday. I can't wait to watch it play out, but you're right. How about Dustin Johnson not being there either? There are some big-time golfers that we take a look at that probably should be there. And you're right. All eyes are going to be on the captain's picks, which you included there. If you're not playing great golf, you know, why are you there, Justin Thomas? We'll see if he provides that spark and say, you know what? He deserved to be there, and he was great.
The atmosphere, though, different, right? Because it is match play, because it is drama, and it is a theatrical atmosphere, unlike a normal PGA Tour event, even a major, DRS. The emotion, the passion that you see during a Ryder Cup, unrivaled in terms of golf. It is the best atmosphere in all of golf. Part of that is your individual play, but also who you are paired up with on the first 2 days, Friday and Saturday. Scottie Scheffler is the favorite right now, alongside Rory McIlroy, both at an 8-1 price to record the most points overall. There is the four-ball matchup, the foursome matchup, and the individuals that we will have on Sunday. Nikolai Højgaard, by the way, from Denmark. My apologies to all the Danish people out there. More of the early lineup next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We are about to enter week number 4 of the National Football League regular season, and all of the offseason, all preseason long, as we got ready for 2023, Donnie, the conversation was about the gauntlet the AFC was expected to be. The AFC East, a new division with Aaron Rodgers, going to be as competitive as you would find. The AFC North stacked top to bottom. Would this be the year that somebody in the AFC West would challenge the Chiefs and knock KC off their perch? Not so far, but a lot of football left to play. And Jacksonville now on the come up in the AFC South. How would things look for the Jaguars? Well, DRS, 3 weeks into this National Football League regular season, a lot has changed. So let's look at the AFC title odds at Market Movers. DRS, on the left side of the graphic that you will see, was the price in the preseason before 2023 in the NFL got underway. The price in the middle is that current number to win an AFC title, and on the far right would be that movement, either adding on to your number or taking off. The Chiefs were the favorites entering the year, rightfully so, plus 350. Despite a loss on opening night, Kansas City remains the favorite, plus 310. The Buffalo Bills, plus 450 before the year, now 5-1, adding on a couple of cents. The biggest movers, though, here, DRS, the Cincinnati Bengals, after a 1-2 start, winless after 2 weeks, they have added on by $3. The Dolphins, though, have their price lowered by a half, 11-1, DRS, now plus 550. And of course, the Jets, for reasons that we all know, Aaron Rodgers going down after just 4 offensive snaps as a member of the Jets, now 65-1 for New York. But Donnie, what's your overall assessment on the AFC after 3 weeks?
There's a lot of bad football teams, I do believe, in the AFC. There's quite a bit of decent football teams. But if we're looking for frontline transactions here and saying who has a chance to win, now granted, it's fun that we do this year, and we're not even at the quarter pole yet in the NFL through the first 3 weeks. I look at it for myself and say, I watch Kansas City, that's a Super Bowl contender. I watch the Buffalo Bills, that's a Super Bowl contender. And I do the same thing with the Miami Dolphins. After that, that shelf comes in. This is coming from a guy that has a ticket here on the Baltimore Ravens for a possible Super Bowl there at 18-1. Now, granted, we're not talking about Super Bowl gear and what those prices would be. We're just trying to focus on the AFC. But I haven't seen a lot out of the Ravens just yet. Yes, they've won some football games. They let one slip away against the Colts. But again, down 8-9 starters on that Sunday. Okay, things are going to happen in the NFL, as we say, Ben, any given Sunday. But for myself and my money right now, there's a clear disconnect on those top teams here and who's ever behind them. Yeah. I watch the Bills, Dolphins, and Chiefs and legitimately get Super Bowl vibes. Everybody else, they're not giving me Super Bowl vibes here in the AFC.
Donnie, I think it's a great point, right? Entering this year, it seemed to be for the past few seasons in the AFC, there was that new tier of three, the Chiefs, Bills, and Bengals in whatever order you wanted to place them, but the Chiefs out ahead given what they have done and accomplished, 2 Super Bowl championships in the last 4 years. But the Bengals got off to a disastrous start, 0-2, sneaking out a win in week number 3 on Monday night, 19-16. Of course, it was Cincy that started off last year 0-2 and still found their way to their second consecutive AFC championship game, winning 13 of their final 15 games. But Donnie, when you look at where things are right now for the Bengals, you can't be overly optimistic they're going to pull off a similar feat once again. The Ravens have so many injuries so far. They have benefited from Cincinnati's struggles, but it's not like Baltimore is far and away the best team in a competitive AFC North. 3 teams at 2-1, the flock, the Browns, and even the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Donnie, part of the reason we expected the AFC to be such a competitive conference this season was because of some newcomers into the fold. The Jacksonville Jaguars, the champions of the AFC South a year ago, heavily favored to make it 2 straight divisional crowns. Jacksonville 1-2, still the favorites in a bad AFC South, but 1-2, and neither of the 3 games for Jacksonville have left you overly confident in this young Jaguars side. And mainly, Donnie, it was the New York Jets, right? A team that hadn't made the postseason in 12 consecutive years, but now had Aaron Rodgers. So not only favored to make the postseason, but probably an AFC title contender. We can erase the Jets from this conversation, Donnie, after 3 weeks.
Yes, correct. And I felt like, you know, at the beginning of the season, many more teams were in this. Now, granted, again, I preface this by saying we're really only taking a look at this like, hey, we're going to hand out the MVP after 2 or 3 weeks, right? Okay, who's in the lead? Who should win it now? We know there's a lot of football to play, which means some teams out here will get injured. Some teams will catch fire. Some teams will underperform. The teams that I thought with a legitimate chance to maybe make a Super Bowl run in the AFC, yeah, we're going to be the Chargers. I thought this might have been the season they could overtake the Kansas City Chiefs. And based on opening day, when you know if you're the Chargers organization, you love seeing them get beat by Detroit. Say, guys, this is our season. They almost wound up 0-3 and needed a late charge there by their defense to stop two drives for Minnesota to keep them out of the end zone. Otherwise, their season would just about be done. I do still think the Baltimore Ravens are going to turn it around. Now, what do they have to turn around? They have a positive record on the season. You just need to keep your team healthy. You'll be in it at the end. The Cincinnati Bengals, we expect much more here, because if you're telling me that Joe Burrow can win football games on one leg, fantastic. Let me see when he's healthy again, manipulating the pocket and getting the ball to those wide receivers here. The Cleveland Browns, we'll see. The Steelers, I thought, might be a little bit better, even though, again, they're winning football games. I just don't see them in that top tier in the AFC. For me, Ben, once again, it's three teams. Chiefs, Bills, Dolphins, as it sits after 3 weeks.
DRS, you got to be a part of the dance, right? To cash that AFC championship ticket, you got to at least make the postseason. One of the seven teams that now make the postseason in either conference. But there is that idea of who are the elite teams that could actually go out there and win you a conference title. The Browns not included on that market movement graphic, but Cleveland was 17-1 before the year got underway. Shave $5 off that price. Now a 12-1 number for the Cleveland Browns. Donnie, there's only one unbeaten team left in the AFC. It's those Miami Dolphins. Their price slashed in half, 11-1 before the year, now plus 550. What would the movement be, Donnie Wrightside, for Miami if the Dolphins go into Orchard Park on Sunday afternoon and start a perfect 4-0? The odds don't expect that necessarily, although the numbers do say we are in for a dandy of the marquee matchup week number 4. Buffalo, a 3-point favorite with a total of 53.5 against the Dolphins. It's an opportunity, Donnie, for both teams, the Dolphins and the Bills, to make a statement this upcoming Sunday.
And it's good you brought that up, because some people watching the program might not understand how the odds market actually works here. And then the AFC, again, the Chiefs plus 310, we think they're probably going to win that division now, because who else is going to challenge them? But as we focus on the Buffalo Bills and the Dolphins, say, well, hold on now. Miami's look pretty good here. Miami's undefeated. You take a look at the Bills, they already have a loss, and it's a divisional loss. Why would the Buffalo Bills be a 5-1 price and the Miami Dolphins be a plus 550 price? Well, as Ben pointed out, you're headed to Orchard Park this weekend. You are an underdog. So theoretically, the odds makers think you're going to lose that game, which means, yes, you'll now be tied in the standings, but the Bills have a notch up because they already beat the Miami Dolphins. And if they can beat them again later in the season, that's de facto 2.5 games that you would have as a lead on them just by playing them straight up here. That's the only reason why. But I got to tell you, I do think the Buffalo Bills win this weekend. I do think we get some points. But is anybody going to be shocked that the Miami Dolphins go up there and Tua just goes off, the running game works, and everything clicks, and they drop 35 points in an exciting game and beat the Buffalo Bills? I won't be surprised, but that's how the odds market works, and that's why the Buffalo Bills are sitting there slightly ahead of the Miami Dolphins right now.
DRS, the only total north of 50 this weekend. In fact, the only total north of 48 points for that over-under of 53.5. That will be an important division game. If the Dolphins start off 2-0 and the Bills 0-2 in the AFC East, Miami already an odds-on favorite at minus 135. That number grows beyond $2. An important divisional game in Cleveland as well. Donnie, at the conclusion of week number 4 and this upcoming Sunday, the Browns will have already played 3 games against the AFC North. That's half of their division games done by the end of the opening month. They host the Baltimore Ravens. DRS, quickly here, is the right side favored? Cleveland laying 2.5 at home?
Yes, and Cleveland is going to. Look, I have a ticket on the Ravens. They're going to get beat this weekend. So there it is.
All right. We'll talk about those early lines a little bit later on. College football next on TEL.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the Early Line, live right here on this Wednesday on Sports Grid. I am Ben Stevens, a college football guy. Donnie Wrightside, of course, is here as well. a college football guy, as is Mark Zeno, the man in the middle, a co-host of Game Time Decisions, at least last night, joining us here to look at weekend number 5 of the 2023 college football campaign. Zeno, after such a significant Saturday, last week, week number 4, 6 ranked versus ranked matchups, maybe week number 5 doesn't have all of that marquee, but still a huge weekend as the month of September comes to a close on Saturday.
Yeah, and look, a lot of interesting spots this week. Just because we see some good sandwich spots, look-ahead spots for some of these ranked teams that are going to be playing their big games again next week. So they had a big game last week. They get a little bit of a down opponent this week. Right. Come back for another big game next week. We'll see who gets caught napping.
Mark, despite a bye 2 weekends ago and a victory by 2 touchdowns over Arizona State, USC moved back in the poll by 3 spots. Now the Trojans ranked 8th. In the country, who's outside of the top 25 now? That would be Deion Sanders, Colorado Buffaloes. Of course, they were lambasted last week in Austin by the Oregon Ducks, a 42-6 victory for Oregon. But Mark, does it take any luster off this game that we have Saturday in Boulder? USC, a 21.5 point favorite against the Buffs, with a total, Zeno, that's even higher than the game was last week in Eugene. It was 70.5 for Oregon and Colorado. It's 73.5 for SC and Colorado. How many points, Mark Zeno, are the Trojans going to score on Saturday in Boulder?
I don't think that's the right question, Ben. I think the question is how many points are the Trojans going to give up? Because in reality, the reason why this number is higher is because the Trojans' defense hasn't improved. And the reason why this number opened at -23.5 and is now -20.5 is because sharp bettors are looking at this going, USC's defense, still a problem. Look, Arizona State is barely a Power 5 school. I know Drew Pine started for them, and he's a little bit more of an accomplished quarterback than what they were starting with Rashada, the kid there, the freshman who was starting before. But, you know, I would tell you that with Pine at center, Arizona State can be able to score a little bit more. Unless USC keeps the Colorado Buffaloes under 20, which I'm not sure that they can do, I don't think they can cover this number. Without a 50 burger going up on their end, and to a certain extent, does Lincoln Riley have the ability to put up 50 anytime he wants? Yes, but there's also a certain extent, I think, that Lincoln Riley is also kind of just sandbagging a little bit and not putting his foot completely on the gas pedal in these spots because he gets a comfortable lead and he's going out and he's not worried about Caleb Williams Heisman. He's not worried about style points. He's worried about wins. And that's all that ultimately matter to him if he wants to get through. So with an interesting spot here for USC and what they have coming up, you know, I would lean on Colorado here. And if they can get over 20, I think that's the magic number. They cover this spread.
Mark, let me ask you a question here. First 3 weeks, and again, all eyes on the prize for Colorado. They're bringing in big ratings, rightfully so. All eyeballs from people that didn't even watch college football before, seemingly interested in the Buffaloes. Tell me what we learned about Colorado last week in that game against Oregon.
That it's really, really hard to turn around an entire program and, you know, roll in 70 new people, even through a transfer portal, and get yourself to a level that is competitive at a Power 5, especially in a conference like the Pac-12, which is the best conference in college football. I mean, the bottom line here is that, yes, quarterbacks will absolutely change things. Shedeur Sanders makes this offense competent. He makes it lively. He makes him have an ability to score points very quickly. But guess what? They did nothing to fix the defense. And the defense was so metrically bad last year. Even if they improved by literally 150%, they still would be a below 100 level defense, like of the bottom, you know, 30 teams in the country. That's how bad they were last year. They would still be in the bottom 30 teams in the country, even with a double improvement of what they did last year. So that's always going to be the problem for Colorado. Their defense is going to be a massive liability. They're going to have to, if they're going to sneak out another win against a legitimate program that is ranked, guess what they're going to need to have? That offense and that team play one of the worst games of the season, because other than that, they can't stop anybody.
Yeah, I do think there is going to be a statement made by USC on Saturday. I think Caleb Williams is going to look to bolster that Heisman resume with all the attention that will be played on Boulder. I think USC names their number and goes out there and gets it. Here's the thing about Colorado, to allude to Mark's point. They were the worst scoring defense in all of college football last year, allowing 44.5 points per game. They are still the worst scoring defense in the Pac-12, allowing more than 33 points per game, giving up more than 475 5 yards of total offense to their opponents. That was always the case. Travis Hunter put a couple of band-aids on some gaping holes for Colorado earlier in the year, but the defense is not good. To Zeno's point, USC's defense under Alex Grinch, not great either. We'll see if they can improve against still a good Colorado offense that was only able to muster up 6 points last week. But Oregon, a top three defense in every metric in the Pac-12, the best passing defense in the Pac-12 so far this season. So now as you look at the Pac-12, of course, this is their final year of existence, at least in this current format. There are still 6 teams ranked in the AP top 25, with Colorado and UCLA falling out after last weekend. USC is the favorite, plus 230, but teams like Oregon and Washington, Mark, have looked as impressive as you will find around college football this year. Now they are tied for the second best prices at plus 270. Zeno, who is your favorite right now to win the Pac-12?
Until I see a team, and again, I don't really know how much Oregon and USC will be able to, what they can do offensively. Until I see a team be able to score at the rate that Washington can, I got to put my money on them. And you know how much I love Bo Nix, a.k.a. Van Wilder, in the 9th year of college, still hanging around. and I think the world of Lincoln Riley and what he does. But, you know, this is a Washington team this year that until you can keep up with them, until somebody can keep up and go score for score with them, I don't know that anybody's going to be able to beat them. Like, you can try and slow them down, but slowing them down still involves them getting to 37 in that range, or even, you know, close to 40. And that's probably not going to be enough to win a football game, just based off of the other teams and their lack of defense as well. Is Oregon's defense improved enough that they can be the one team to upset them? We'll find out next week, guys, right? I mean, that's really what it boils down to, in the ultimate revenge spot for what we saw last year when Oregon dropped that game at home in a game that basically ended their season with an injured Bo Nix in that game hobbling around. But, you know, this is a Washington team right now that I think is probably one of the three best teams in the country, and I don't see anybody being able to keep up with them offensively.
All right, Pac-12 After Dark. Let's have some fun on Friday Night Football here. This game's going to start at 9 o'clock. Utah and Oregon State, maybe a contrast in styles here. If we take a look at the FanDuel Sportsbook, they originally opened up this game, Mark, as Utah's a -1.5-point favorite. We've now seen it swing back to Oregon State at a -3.5-point favorite. A total that opened up at 47.5 now sits at 44.5. Questions are rising here for Utah when Cam Rising actually is going to take control under center. What do we get out of this game in the Pac-12 on Friday night, Mark?
I like how you did that. Questions are rising about Cam Rising. Yes, and that's really the only question that matters. The only question that matters is, will he play? Because I can't bet it unless I know what I'm looking at, because Cam Rising clearly changes the dynamic on offense for Utah. Look, it is very interesting that Oregon State, coming off a loss to Washington State last week where they were beat pretty soundly in that game by Wazoo, is now a favorite against a undefeated team. Like, this is a prime spot here for Oregon State. Corvallis, an incredibly tough place to play. And this may be one of those grind it down kind of games. It kind of feels like an under game, to be honest with you, with both of these teams being as physical as they are. Damian Martinez did not have the game that we thought he was going to have against Wazoo, which is not a particularly stout defense. I think he comes back with a vengeance in this game for Oregon State. Yeah. I like the Beavs here at home, laying the points.
Here's the thing about the difference between Wazoo and Utah. Utah, as physically dominant as you will find, top 10 defense in the country in terms of points allowed, total yards allowed, rushing yards allowed. But Oregon State, pretty good against the run as well. 7th best in the country, allowing less than 70 yards per game. And Utah, without Cam Rising, is focusing on the ground. What those odds might look like if Rising makes his debut in 2023. Zeno, only 3 ranked versus ranked matchups on this Saturday in college football. But my favorite, a top 25 tilt in Texas between the Longhorns, ranked 3rd in the country, and number 24, the Kansas Jayhawks. A 16.5-point spread, Mark Zeno, in favor of Texas between 2 unbeaten teams. Is this game more competitive than that line would indicate?
I hate these situations where you get a team like Texas that has all the publicity and all the bluster and all the hype and everything else, and they're laying what seems like a relatively shorter number than you'd expect against a team that's record says 4-0, but might not be a 4-0 caliber team that we're looking at with the rest of the teams in the top 10. It seems like there's a pretty wide gulf between, you know, where Texas is in the top 25 and where Kansas is as far as the quality of team that we're looking at. Now, that said, I'm not backing the Longhorns here. I'm going to stay away from the side, look total here. Look, remember, Kansas is a 200-200 team. Average over 200 yards passing and over 200 yards rushing. There's a lot there for Texas, a defense to contend with. Has Texas really been tested offensively by a team? Did Alabama really test them? I would use that as the barometer to say this game goes over the total here, because Alabama's offense, I don't know if it's right or when they played them, is as good as Kansas has been to this point. So I know these teams defensively look stout on paper. Who have they really played? Both of these run defenses giving up less than 80 yards a game on the ground. But I think we get a lot of points here, guys. I lean to the over.
I think Kansas is a better defense than they have gotten credit for so far this year, actually ranking ahead of Texas in terms of yards allowed. But I would agree with Mark Zinno. As you look at the quarterback play, Jalen Daniels, as good as you will find. Quinn Ewers on the other side, of course, pretty darn good as well. Texas, a minus money favorite now to win the Big 12, looking for their first conference title since 2009. Plenty of more around college football next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We preview an SEC Saturday around the Southeastern Conference, week number 5 of this college football season, the final Saturday in September of the college football campaign. Welcome back to a Wednesday live right here on the Early Line. I am Ben Stevens. Donnie Wrightside, of course, is here as well. Mark Zinno joins us for a second consecutive segment. A college football mind, that is what Mark Zinno is. But when it comes to the SEC, he becomes the mouth in the South. And here are his SEC picks. Number one in the rankings, Mark Zinno. Number one in our hearts. Actually the best team in college football. Those are the questions around the Georgia Bulldogs, the two-time defending national champions. Mark Zinno, they are one of two teams. In fact, the top two teams still in the AP top 25 that are undefeated this year, Georgia and Michigan, with both the Bulldogs and the Wolverines winless against the number. Neither have covered so far. Georgia a perfect 4-0 straight up, but 0-4 against the spread. The Deep South's oldest rivalry on the plains at Jordan-Hare Stadium this weekend in Auburn, Alabama. Number one, Georgia, north of a 2-touchdown favorite, Mark Zinno. The Dogs laying 14.5 on the road against Auburn with a total of 46.5. Mark Zinno, is this the week that Georgia finally covers a number?
I know crazy things happen at Jordan-Hare. I know it's always a tough battle between these two teams, but the short answer has been probably yes. Don't be fooled by Auburn's numbers here. Okay? Their offensive numbers come from two blowout wins at home over UMass and Samford. Their other two games on the road, they scored a combined 24 points, 14 against Cal, 10 against A&M. And those two games combined, Tigers quarterback Peyton Thorne of Michigan State lore went a combined 15 of 26 for 138 passing yards and was sacked 8 times. Last game out, the Tigers against the Aggies were held to 200 total yards, 3 for 15 on third down. Are we not to believe that A&M's defense is every bit as good as Georgia's? So why shouldn't UGA have a similar level of success against Auburn's offense? The only question mark here is if Hugh Freeze decides to make a switch full-time to Robbie Ashford and let his legs do most of the work. That's the one thing you really can't account for. Robbie Ashford has been getting a little bit of run here in some kind of, you know, sets and different plays on offense for Auburn. But the fact of the matter is that this number feels way too short for me overall. I would definitively play Auburn's team total if it's under 14.5, which I think the math works out that's where it is. Auburn team total under 14.5. And I think Georgia finally covers their first game of the year here. For as much as I've been down on UGA, this is not the opponent that is going to make them pay for it.
More SEC talk. 12 noon kickoff here. It's Florida and Kentucky, and it felt like for decades, no chance Kentucky ever had a chance to beat Florida. They've actually won now two straight games against the Gators. This line opened up at -1.5 at the FanDuel Sportsbook mark, and we still see a -1.5 and a low total opening up at 47.5, now down to 44.5, and some 44s out there in the market space. You take a look at this game, and it's interesting because usually when you see an SEC team, Mark, at 4-0, where are they ranked? 5, 10, 15, at least in the top 20. That's not the case for Kentucky. Four cupcakes on their schedule, and quite frankly, Leary, the transfer quarterback, hasn't looked all that good. 9 touchdown passes along with 5 interceptions. What are we looking at here from Florida and Kentucky from your perspective?
Well, you may have missed the best of the number here because certain shops opened up Florida as a 3-point dog. And I'm kicking myself for not jumping on it when I did. As soon as I saw it, I circled Florida, money line, outright winner. This is absolutely a spot here where the Florida Gators remind Kentucky that they're Kentucky and we're Florida. This defense that Billy Napier has built is not only really good, it's very, very good. I mean, they're only giving up 162 passing yards per game. That's not a good sign for Devin Leary, who, as you said, has not played well and has not played a defense worth a stink this entire year, and yet he's still thrown 5 picks in 4 games. This sets up horribly for Kentucky. I don't like the matchup for them here. I don't know if they're going to be able to run with any real measure of success against Florida. Graham Mertz doesn't have to be great. He just has to take care of the football and not hurt his team, similar to what he did against Tennessee, and he should be okay here. I think Florida wins this game outright.
Florida's a top 5 defense in the country in terms of yards allowed per game, only giving up 245. And I actually think, Mark, you highlighted how good they are through the air. I think their ground defense a lot better as well. Utah ran it on them for over 100 yards in that season opening game, but only about 3.3 yards per carry. That's what Utah's going to do. They're going to run the football. And Florida really actually held up in that season opener on the road in Rice-Eccles. From that point, nobody has run for more than 100 yards on this Gators defense. The defense, supremely talented. They will focus on the ground as well. I think Florida is the right side favored in this matchup. I did want to make one final point as well, Zeno, to your point about the Auburn offensive numbers this weekend against Georgia. If you think Georgia scores about 24 points, they're going to cover as a 14.5 point favorite. Auburn hasn't thrown for 100 passing yards in 5 straight games against Power 5 competition, dating back to the end of October last year against Arkansas. That's 14 from the SEC, sure, but even against the Berkeley Bears early week number 2, Auburn did not throw for over 100 passing yards. Georgia might have some issues. Georgia needs to find their identity offensively. Dejon Edwards being back is huge for UGA, now fully healthy. But boy, I don't know how Auburn scored more than a touchdown in this matchup, the Deep South's oldest rivalry, for the 128th time this Saturday on the Plains in Auburn. Mark Zinno, let's talk about the Alabama Crimson Tide. Not a great start last week at home in Tuscaloosa against Ole Miss, down 7-6 at the break. Jalen Milroe threw an early interception, but then the offense started to find its groove. They scored on their first 3 offensive possessions in the second half. They focused on the ground, and they won the game covering by a margin of 7 points, 24-10. Alabama now on the road in Stark Vegas this week against Mississippi State. So, Zeno, talk to me about the Crimson Tide. You see here north of a 2-touchdown favorite against the Bulldogs. What did you see out of Alabama's offense last Saturday against Ole Miss that they will bring into this Saturday against Mississippi State?
To be honest with you, I'm still trying to figure it out because I don't know if their offense was successful as a measure that Ole Miss doesn't play defense very well, and there may just be some sort of hex on Lane Kiffin and his ability to beat Nick Saban. But if you believe that Ole Miss was the elixir for this Alabama offense, they're going to get an even worse defense this week in Mississippi State, and they should be able to go out and cover this number. We saw what LSU was able to do to Mississippi State in Starkville a couple of weeks ago as they put up 41 there.
Yeah.
I don't think Alabama is capable of putting up 41, but I also don't believe that this is a Mississippi State team that's really in a state of transition, you know, in the way they're running their offense. Yep. You know, Will Rogers on pace to shatter every SEC passing record, and now it might be kind of up in the air with him for throwing as few yards per game as he is. Mississippi State's become a running team. They want to ground and pound it. So the identity of this team is still being transitioned. And I just don't like Mississippi State here. I think it's Alabama or pass if you really feel comfortable enough to lay that number and you believe Alabama's offensive issues are starting to get turned around.
Mark, let me ask you a question about Alabama, not just for this game, but for the rest of the season here in the SEC. Great coaches like Nick Saban, you see what you have in your football team, and you sort of meld that game plan around it. In the past, we've seen Heisman Trophy winners, dominant offenses moving up and down the field, almost like that old-school SEC was no longer the SEC. But now we see in the last three games, 24 points against Texas, 17 points versus South Florida, 24 points versus Ole Miss. Is this a new Alabama football team where they're going to try to win ugly? But again, all you want to do is actually win, but in the past, it seems so much easier. Give me a point here for Alabama moving forward. Is this what we're getting? 24 points, play good defense, and we're going to win the SEC that way?
I mean, if they'd like to take it back to, like, you know, 2012, 2013,
yeah.
I suppose so. If you believe that that can actually work in college football nowadays. But look at the respect Alabama still gets and the price that they are as a second favorite to win the SEC, even against a team like LSU and what we've seen what they are capable of. So, if Alabama wants to win that way, guess what? That might be good enough to absolutely get them through the SEC West, given the thin level of competition all of a sudden that is there in the SEC West, that nobody really may challenge them. And the way they took care of Ole Miss, all they really have to do is figure out how to beat LSU, which is possible. But you don't think that Georgia and Kirby Smart can play that exact same style and beat them at their own game? Of course they can. Better horses in the barn, more experience here. I don't know that it's a formula that gets them to an SEC title.
Yeah, Zeno, I think it's a great point, right? And we have that SEC West virtual elimination game on Saturday in the Grove between Ole Miss and LSU, one of the three ranked versus ranked matchups that we have on Saturday. How do the Running Rebs bounce back after disappointment last week in Tuscaloosa? LSU, Zeno, I feel like is being slept on ever so slightly, but they escaped last week against Arkansas after a dominant performance the week prior against Mississippi State. The reason it's a virtual elimination game, we showed you the SEC title odds right there. Georgia, an odds-on favorite, minus 135. Alabama, the second-best price, plus 360. The Tide, only 90 cents in front of LSU, plus 450, only a 40-cent gap between Alabama and LSU in the SEC West Division Championship odds. Ole Miss already has an SEC loss. If they were to suffer their second, it's going to be difficult in division, Mark Zeno, to see Atlanta. LSU, if they suffer their second loss, still might be able to say something in the SEC, but in terms of college football playoff contention, maybe out the window for Brian Kelly in the Bayou Bengals. Knowing all of that, Mark Zeno, knowing it's just a 2.5-point spread with a total of 67.5, how significant is Saturday between Ole Miss and LSU?
Well, I mean, as you said, it's an elimination game for Ole Miss. I mean, LSU theoretically still will be alive. Their only loss was to Florida State. So it doesn't mean as much to them if they lose this here. But Mississippi better figure out a way to play with a lead against LSU. They have to get out early and play with a lead and allow Lane Kiffin the full complement of his offense to be able to catch, you know, to be able to call all the plays that he wants to play and keep LSU guessing. If LSU gets up early by, you know, double digits, 10-0 or 13-3, whatever it may be, you know, constantly the pressure is going to be on Lane Kiffin to find that home run play. And look, still, this is an LSU defense. It's not great. It's pretty darn good. I mean, it's good enough to hang around the SEC. Yeah. It's good enough to be able to win the SEC this year, given what their offense is capable of. So, you know, this is all about the first quarter for me. First 7 to 10 minutes of this game will dictate who really ultimately is going to come out on top, if you ask me. If LSU gets ahead early and Ole Miss is forced to play catch-up, that is not a game script that has served Lane Kiffin well in previous years, and it certainly didn't serve him well last week against Alabama.
All right. I would also say one more thing about the SEC slate this weekend. It would be Jaden Daniels looking at that passing yards prop against Ole Miss, the best quarterback the Running Rebs have played this year. Haynes King of Georgia Tech threw for over 300 yards, and Jaden Daniels has thrown for at least 320 in every game against FBS opponents this year. and maybe Jalen Milroe, a passing yards prop, works, you know, against Mississippi State, the worst passing defense so far in the SEC. Zeno, we appreciate it as always. Thank you for your time. Enjoy the Saturday slate in the SEC.
Will do, gentlemen. Thank you as always.
We appreciate it as always, Mark Zeno. We will ask you, the public out there, who you consider to be the best team in college football as we round out this second hour with a fade the public poll. Come back and join us next on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on this Wednesday on the Early Line, rounding out hour number two of our show. I am Ben Stevens. Donnie Wrightside, of course, is here as well. Before we hear from you, we want to let you know this is where you can get all the great information the Spiz Grizz Network has to offer. It's the ultimate sports betting companion app. It's the Sports Grid app, available for download at both the Apple and the Play stores. And DRS, the great thing now about that Sports Grid app, it links up with the four major sports books out there, of course, first and foremost. That is the FanDuel Sportsbook, the wonderful partner of our show. And you can track your bets and sync your bets that you have in whatever book with the SportsGrid app to follow along on a nightly and daily basis. But, Donnie, we want to hear from the people out there who they consider the best team in what has already been an up-in-the-air first month of the college football season. Who's the best team in CFB? Tell us and fade the public. All right, DRS, at SportsGrid TV on Twitter, that's where the question lives. You can still go there and vote. Three options for you in terms of actual teams and a fourth other component because there's a lot of teams that could fit in that category. Who's the best team in college football so far? Georgia, Michigan, Texas, or other. Of course, the Dogs, the Maize and Blue, and the Longhorns, the top three teams in the AP poll. DRS, the public is seeing it correctly, in my estimation. Most of the vote, near 38% of the vote, saying other. Somebody not inside the AP top three. Donnie, what's your assessment of who the best team in college football is?
Yeah, I think it is other is the correct response here. Through 164 votes already this morning, about 38% of the public coming in on other, and I feel that's correct. Now, granted, if you are looking at the polls, yeah, Georgia's really good. So is Michigan, and yes, so is Texas. But if I'm being honest with myself, you're getting negative points here for Georgia and Michigan. Play somebody, and then maybe I'll think about you being the best team in the country. So other, regardless of who your other is, that's the correct response.
And we're going to name a team that we would put in that other category to start off our number three. DRS, for me, the beautiful thing about what we do through the odds, it's not just a cupcake schedule. It's about the expectation and covering numbers. Georgia and Michigan haven't done that. We'll see you in 55 seconds.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Say big on your next project at Menards. Check out our huge selection of Richmond water heaters. Whether it's electric or gas, tank or tankless, Menards has what you need in stock. Ensure that you have hot water for when you need it most with a new Richmond water heater from Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save